Hello, dear friends, and welcome to an addendum to Reading Plays. So, James and I were contacted last week by an associate of ours from our time volunteering in the Dublin Arts Centre Exchange Dublin. Her name is Aggie Brila, and she was producing a play called The Ethics Committee, which is based on a kind of strange collaborative online fiction project, which is all about conspiracies, meta-text, and Lovecraftian goings-on. So we headed down to the theatre and interviewed the cast after the production. Let us know if you'd like this, if you'd like more things like it. Obviously, it's quite a departure from Reading Plays, but we got the opportunity, so we did it anyway. No bother if it's not your cup of tea. There's plenty more to drink at a regular podcast. So without further ado, here is our interview with the cast of The Ethics Committee, which was performed last week in Smock Alley Theatre in Dublin. The play was written and directed by Catherine Farmer and based on the website the SCP Foundation.
The Ethics Committee, as far as I understand, is about the use and abuse of various technologies and about this overall foundation that has discretion on whether or not to release certain anomalous objects into the mainstream or not. And there's a 05 Council which secures certain anomalous objects and sends in proposals for the Ethics Committee to deny or accept.
Okay, so from what I took, and we've just seen the play to point out as well, there was a lot of taxonomy in this, so a lot of different terms being brought up in different departments very quickly. How was it learning that with the script? I mean, how was that to try and get in your own mind? How did that work?
Well, for me personally, it was a challenge because it was a very formulaic or sort of scientific language that I hadn't been used to. So for me, there was a lot of character behind those lines. So you could read into those lines. But how did you guys find the language?
I thought it was a lot of fun personally. Hi, I'm Liam, by the way. Because the show is based on this website called the SCP Foundation. It's a wiki page where people can contribute their own stories and all this kind of thing. And it's formatted like they're declassified reports on these supernatural things that the SCP Foundation is holding on to. So literally, like, you just keep reading about all the stuff and all the different terminology, and you just, it's the kind of thing that you might sit day up late reading with like 10 tabs open before long. It's great, but you won't really sleep.
Yeah, I mean, I got the sense of, as a child growing up and being quite introverted and nerdy, as most people seem to be today, whether chic or not, I got a lot of Majestic 12 what are the other groups? I mean, you think of Man in Black, but I also couldn't help but think of an anime series, and I think it's quite relevant. It's called Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Oh, God, yes.
In this show, they have the same thing where they have multiple departments, one that will deal with the ethics and the consciousness, the other one that loses its memory all the time and has to try and always instigate in terms of taking care of anomalies in the world, and then the people in between and how it affects them. And it's a very similar breakdown. And you think that, and then I was reminded of the Buffy series, so the Buffyverse with Joss Whedon and Angel. It's all very similar, and you have Wolfman Hart in that. And I thought there was there was something interesting there, but then you're saying that it's actually because this online wiki, in fact, pretty much took this idea of the ancient order of something, knowing the knowledge of the world and then keeping it from the people, and then you just took that and put that into play. Am I right there?
Yes, pretty much. Like, basically, the writer, Catherine Farmer, who also directed us, she took inspiration from loads of different SCP articles and things about the Foundation. All of them are in the program as well, and they're all freely available online. And, yeah, it was used to kind of interweave into this one story, which is kind of a whistle-stop tour of the whole organization.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there was a lot going on. And I was trying to think of like a through line for the story, like what was the heart, who was the person that was kind of centered around. And I suppose that character would have been the lady who just left.
Yeah, the newbie, yes, Miriam.
And how was rehearsing this? I have to ask that of all of you.
Well, it was a lot of fun.
We had a bit of difficulty because there was another actor playing the part that Miriam played, and she broke her foot a few days before we started. So Miriam had to be slotted in at the last minute, and she did this amazing job of learning a million lines.
And doing it well, too.
Not just learning them,
but doing them properly.
Yeah, exactly. So she had to be slotted in at the last minute, and she's done a really amazing job with it. But it kind of added a bit of tension to the... Not tension, but... what's the word I'm trying to think of?
It's a bit of a trial by fire, let's say. It was like we all had to be really on point. We had to be learning our lines and doing our research and coming in as prepared as possible every single day to make sure we could get the show on its feet. But, you know, when we did the full run through, our first full run through on the Sunday before we opened, we thought, oh, cool, it all fits together. We did it. Grand. And then from there, we've just been trying to improve it.
And you felt, I mean, how many shows have you done now, actually, just ask?
This is our fifth show of eight. So, yeah, we're just a bit over halfway through now.
And you feel it's kind of really coming together because the script is intense. There's a lot of new words coming in, neologisms, abbreviations, quick terminologies that would, I mean, I recognize some of them, but then you're throwing in Latin, then you're throwing in, I think at one point, some, it wasn't Yiddish, but some ancient Hebrew, and you have to remember that and then describe it in the show. So I'm just wondering how did that come together, and more importantly, how is it going? Like, because you're going to do more shows, so.
Well, I mean, it's the case with any show, no matter what the content is, no matter how complex it is, the more you do it, the more confident you get at it. You know, there's like ups and downs, you know, sometimes one night might not go as well as the previous night, but in general, it gets better and better each time you get more comfortable with it as you start to loosen up and have more fun with it. It doesn't matter about like what the material is, like, you know, as long as you're at the repetition and working on it, just it makes it easier no matter what.
And you all felt the same about the script? You just, it's getting better, keep iterating? And sorry yourself, I didn't catch your name as well.
Oh, Elitsa is my name.
One more time, sorry.
Elitsa?
That's
a bit, yeah.
Your role in it?
I'm the fifthest. I'm the pure evil in it. Yeah.
The fifth church?
The fifthest, yes. She's a member of the fifth church. And, she's trying to destroy the SCP in a really sneaky way and then just turn the world into this reality. Alternative sort of thing. She fails apparently, but yeah, that's her purpose.
Yeah. it's okay. We can interrupt everything.
Yes, exactly. So yes. I don't know how she got involved. That's not exactly in the script, but I assume she just went mad with all the stuff she has seen so far, and she wants to attract newbie on her side. She's too strong-minded, so she doesn't give up that easy. And yes.
There is that kind of thing, like, every character has some kind of, like, conflict. Like, you know, Fifth is kind of, like, Elisa's character kind of cracked under the strain, and so retreated into this crazy self-help book. All the other characters have their own internal conflicts. We focus mainly on the newbie, of course, in the play, but everyone has to deal with their own stuff. Like, Declan's character, the D-class, dealing with the fact that he's hoping to get some answers, but he knows that he's basically living on borrowed time, that he could be killed at any moment from his work, and, yeah, everyone's got their own arc to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult thing because, I mean, obviously the audience has their... There's a surrogate in the newbie, right? So the audience has to place themselves there, and how are we going to learn all these different things? More importantly, what are the answers to them? And I felt like even at the end, there wasn't really many answers. And obviously there wasn't supposed to be because I'm getting the sense that obviously order and chaos playing against one another, and then in the center you have people who are controlling both order and chaos and yet don't seem to know any truth. In other words, it's... basically, I didn't really understand too much about, like, how you were going to try and get the information across. But by the end, it came together quite nicely. But how did you feel about that when you had to, like, when you're reading the script and you were taking this part? How did you feel about it?
Well, I think that's the thing with it as well, is it's a thing with the SCP website itself, with the way it's written. There's all these different bits that are redacted, or the data's expunged, or they're just big black marks. And so, like, all these certain details are removed, so you have to fill in the blanks with your own mind. Like, you know, the procedures, the SCPs, what they are, what they do. They give you just enough, and then it's like, you know... For example, on the SCP website, they kind of talk about it in the show, Procedure 110 Montauk. On the website, there's a thing from the overseer about, like, well, I want to dispel some rumors about the thing. First off, yes, it does involve Brutal, and then it just says data expunged. So you don't even find out what they're exactly talking about, but you can fill in the blanks. It's, like, the thing with the show is, like, it's going for that kind of horror, which is, like, it gives you just enough for your imagination to fill in the blanks, so just wonder what that is. It's to make your imagination just go wild, basically.
And that's the other thing, is the kind of language you're saying, it's quite extremely scientific. And so to try to wrap your tongue or your mouth around them is a real actor's craft, because there are all these words, different sounds, like consonants popping off one another, and so you really have to be able to just chew those mouths, those words in your mouth, and be able to make them pop like popcorn. And so that was kind of, language itself is in, it has something within it, and then it's like digging within that language.
It was It was very fricative heavy, or fricity, I think that is the word. Yeah, fricative heavy. It's like a consonant, the chewing as you put down. It's very true, because you have those heavy, anything with a consonant means connecting the mouth, right? And whereas humans were obviously, we came from a history where it was just screaming was easy. Vowels are easy. It's loud, it's open, it's immediate.
The emotional content, yeah.
Something you had to learn and get really down to actually practicing. And as you put it down in the show, I don't know if you use the word heuristics, but that's something that's very much involved in it as well, process intensive. But you mentioned memetics a lot in this.
Yeah,
and I'm wondering, what is that to do more with memory as a theme, or is it more to do with...
Well, as far as I understood, memetics was, it was this the Star Signals book. That's how I read it, the Star Signals.
That's kind of one of the things, like, the character I play was this, the commander of this task force that deals with memetic hazards, as it's called. And basically what that means is things that can't be perceived with the human eye, like... The best way to describe it, I suppose, is, you know, like, stereotyping someone, like, saying, oh, like, all Irish drink, for example, just off the top of my head. That's a meme. That's something that's been passed down. A meme is, like, an idea that's been passed down. And maybe not something you necessarily learn, but it's kind of absorbed through the environment. It's one of Richard Dawkins' many theories. One of his few good ones, in my opinion. But, yeah, the idea with the anomalous memes is that they're things that cause people to go crazy or kill people or want to spread stuff, like the play that's mentioned, The Hanged King's Tragedy. It's like, it's a play that causes people to kill each other. And it doesn't happen until the opening night when there's lots of people there. So it's this weird thing. And there's another unexplained thing. Why does this play do this? How does it happen? That's never explained because it's simply not known.
And in that sense, it's an essence of truth then. It's not that the event is there or the word connects to its meaning. It's just an essence of it. It's an echo of that, which I suppose the play is.
Yeah.
Because so much of the play is featuring references to offstage things, things that aren't happening, things that you are seeing but we can't see, and then really the thing itself is one big echo of some other event. And that's quite nicely done. I have to say that was something I definitely took away from it. But again, I'm just down to all of you in some way trying to explain how did you feel about... Because if I was looking at that script, not that I've ever had acting experience, but if I was looking at it and thinking, like, how can I really work with this? How can I comprehend it? I mean, I would be a little bit stuck. Do you see what I mean? Just in terms of, like, who am I in this? I mean, so I'm wondering how you all felt about that. Anyone, really.
Well, yeah, it was just... It was very difficult for me in particular because my character is fairly small, fairly thinly sketched. But I guess the main... The main thing I did was I just read up on a lot of things that he would have seen, a lot of the reports and stuff on the SCP website. The best thing, what worked for me personally was just reading as much as I could.
Right, okay. And the rest of you?
Well, I suppose ethics and newbie in some ways had the easiest part of it because you could kind of identify what they were trying to do. Ethics found out about what was going on in the Foundation and then from that decided to join the committee and do what she could to stop these horrible things happening. So that really wasn't... That was probably the easiest one to connect with rather than yours or... Yeah.
Yes, well. I connected with it perfectly fine now. But no, she's not just evil. She actually wants change in the world. She wants to fill the holes, as she says. So she doesn't like what she sees. She goes mad, so she's looking for other ways to change the world, really. So I don't see her as that evil. Yeah, she's... crazy, but evil, well, she's dominant, but not exactly evil. She just wants a different world because she's seeing too much evil. She's so used to it at this stage, she almost enjoys it. Well, she actually does enjoy it, but but she still wants to change the world. She wants something different. That's her only way out, I suppose. Mm. And, doesn't really say much about the character in the script, so I had to make it up. But and she sees that she joins the Fifth Church and she sees that way of just escaping the whole crazy anomalous bullshit. Like, really,
I was surprised there wasn't an apocalypse, though. I have to say, only because usually these types of plots do end with an end of the world scenario. There's always an apocalypse coming.
There is an end of the world scenario where there's this rebellion in India in 1921 that my character briefly mentions, but they manage to patch back up reality, and that incident, the records, the traces of that incident, don't happen. So there are moments in the history where these potential anomalous objects are leaked, and then you hear about them in the future. So it's possible that these breaches are happening, but it's the containment of those breaches and then the protocols that are put into effect to soothe and make the consensus on which reality is based normal.
Yeah.
So like no one can really question things, you know?
I mean, it's multiple things, but that's a big theme even now in the return of bigger cable dramas and other films, looking into like old Nietzschean concepts. The consensus of reality, I just immediately thought of, not that I particularly like the show, but I think of True Detective, only because recently that's just come out. And again, you have a character whose whole point in the show is to remind everyone that this is an illusion. It's an agreed upon idea.
Yeah.
Reality is, in fact, just a series of rules that we enforce on ourselves, yeah. This kind of chaos. And lack was mentioned in this as well. So those two things seem to play against one another, or at least, no, I should say they play together. Like lack is something that seems to be big in this. There's a lack in someone's soul. You're looking at your own abyss. It was an opening remark. And then later on, you have talk about this idea that reality is illusion. So I always think, well, the only real, you know, answer tends to be apocalypse, at least in when it's been dealt with in other shows or another, you know, a text. It's apocalypse is the answer to massive disorder. But so I was really surprised by that.
Well, I think that there's the thing though as well that, you know, the apocalypse, having ended with the apocalypse, the world ending, it's kind of like, you know, oh, okay, the world ended. Well, that's fine. And that's how it ends. But I think it's kind of better. It's more interesting if it doesn't end that way. Because like the world hasn't ended, but it could. There's something that we may have overlooked that might destroy the world. And we're barely keeping things under control as is. Like it's, I think it works better that way. It makes a more tenuous open ending kind of works better. Because it's like, what if it's like that here? What if the world could end at any moment? That kind of thing. The producer of the show is someone I worked with before, and she basically called me up a few weeks ago, like not too long after the rehearsal started, and she said, "Hey, Liam, you want to be in a play?" I was like, "Yeah, sure, fine." And well, I'm an actor as well. I'm not like just some randomer she got off the street, but yeah, I kind of fell into this and just joined with everyone else. And I knew I had already worked with Alitza before, and so I was like, "Yeah, I'm definitely going to work with her again because she's a good friend of mine."
I've worked with the director and the writer before, Catherine. I've done work with her before, and she was telling me about the idea of the show. I was really interested in it, and I was like, yeah, I'll definitely come see that. And then I got an email about 2 weeks later, like, want to be in it? I was like, okay, essentially. But I mean, I act as well, like, so,
yeah.
Again, not quite a randomer off the street, but yeah, that's how I got into it.
All of us are trained. I'm just so glad Gareth has stretched across the table as well.
I've been doing physical theatre workshops with Alitza for a couple of months before, and so Alitza knew Aggie and Catherine Farmer, the writer. So she suggested that I go to the audition and did the audition and had done it. I had known Liam from collaborations from last year. He was wearing a wooden tie. And so that kind of like stuck in my mind.
I was actually seen as the character, unfortunately. So I was asked to audition for this, but I think it was already decided that I've got the evil vibe about me. So I got cast into it that way. I was seen as the crazy person. So I suppose I'm a typecast at the stage. That's what happened. So
there you have it. That is our interview at poorly handled, mismanaged, and improvised on the spot, no doubt. But perhaps interesting to you. We will return with the second part of our discussion of J.P. Shanley's play Doubt in our usual slot. That's next Tuesday at 6 to 7 on RadioMed.ie for the live show, or later that evening or early Wednesday for the podcast. And as always, we're happy to have your comments. Please get in touch, email us, or leave a comment at the blog. It's garethstack.com. See you next week.